Hello and welcome to my Yellow Bench. I'm Liv Cropper, I'm a transformational leadership coach, and this is Rooted, the human side of sustainability leadership. In every episode of Rooted, I talk with a sustainability leader about their roots in this work, the impact they're most proud of, how they've kept grounded along the way, and the seeds of wisdom they can share with us. In every conversation, we'll talk about how it really feels to do this work. So, if you're ready for today's episode, please take a seat. I'll start by saying that I am so excited to welcome my guest today on Rooted. She's been a leader at the highest levels of the sustainability world for over 20 years. Her roots in this work began with a very impressive academic career, specialising in forestry, and she gained a PhD from Cardiff University. And she then branched out into corporate to apply that knowledge, first in the energy industry and then following the money, if you like, through to financial services. She's been head of sustainability at Drax, at OVO and at Lloyds Banking Group, and that's where we met. And she served on the UK Climate Change Committee and a whole host of other boards and advisory roles. She now has a big portfolio of exciting work advising across the public and the private sector. And I am so pleased to welcome you, Dr. Rebecca Heaton, or I'm going to call you Becky, if that's all right with you, known as Becky to her friends. So yeah, welcome Becky to Rooted.
Good morning, Liv. It's absolutely great to be here and have a chat.
So let me ask you, I'm quite excited about this because actually I know bits about you from bits of conversations that we've had and where our paths have crossed, but there's so much that I don't know about you. So these questions I'm really excited about. I really want you to tell me about where your roots in this work began. What drove your career journey?
So I started off at 18, went to Bangor University and read forestry, which is probably not your average choice, really. And I've never forgotten, I had this little book at school and it said careers in biology. And there it was, forestry. And it just ticked every box for me because it was commercial, it was business, it was outdoors, it was science. It was sort of everything. And I just said, right, this is what I want to do. And there was a lot of humming and, you know, hawing, going, well, yes. I should be going to do biology at probably a slightly more prestigious university. And I said, no, I just want to do this. And I feel so glad that I did. It was an absolute joy, the forestry years at Bangor. And I'm now an honorary fellow of the university. So that love has sort of carried on in support for what they do. And I've got colleagues and friends from that time that I still know now. It's a very small world. I just recommend a forestry career to anybody. And it's a great grounding because you learn about economics, you learn about communities, you learn about HR, you learn about accounting, you learn everything. It's sort of businessy, but in that natural environment. And what was really clear then, so I went to university in 1989, was that climate change was becoming more and more impactful. So it wasn't talked about in the external world, but it was quite a theme of those years at university. And clearly, this was going to be the thing we were going to have to tackle, alongside, at that time, acid rain and the ozone layer depleting. Yes. And of course, the wonderful thing is, we've sort of solved acid rain and the ozone layer. We've got a global agreement and it's sort of repaired. It's not doing too badly. So that gives me hope sometimes. And we can't compare that to climate change. But at the time, they were probably the three big things that we were taught about and that we were worried about.
Yeah. And when you were at school and when you were thinking about what degree you were going to go to and what path you were going to go down, were you a kind of an outdoorsy, you know, running around forests at the weekend kind of a girl? Or was it how much was your a sort of a love of nature in there or was it something
totally
else?
Outdoors, yeah. Yeah. You know, my dad taught me to map read when I was 11. We were outdoors. Although I grew up in the middle of Bristol, yeah, we were outside the whole time. And, you know, and I did all the scouts and we did orienteering competitions. And, you know, yeah, I just love being outdoors. And that's what I wanted to do, really. And I looked at biology, which was the subject I was best at in school. And it all just looked like looking down microscopes and being in labs. And I just thought there was also a precision needed for lab work, which, let's be let's be frank, I probably don't have that patience and precision, you know, whereas trees, they're quite big. You don't have to be quite so precise, really. So that suited me very, very well.
Yeah. More getting your hands dirty, getting out in the real world. Yeah. Lovely. And what drove that move then out of academia and into the corporate world? What was the kind of force there? Because I guess there is a path where you stay in academia always and keep going on that.
Yeah.
Really.
And I was reflecting that because you'd asked me and I thought, I think at the time, I somewhat naively thought I could make a lot more impact in business than I could in academia. But actually, I think I was probably wrong in that. Okay. You know, particularly when you look at the IPCC, you know, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and how those reports are generated. And actually, my whole career now has been about following the scientists and the science. So I may have been wrong, but it actually has worked really well for me, moving into that corporate world and trying to do that change from within and, you know, making decisions to work for companies, which some people sort of do a deep breath on. But you go, well, actually, that's the way that I've chosen to make my impact on the world, is by trying to work within companies to do that.
Yeah, that's clear. And I think, but you've kept your foot definitely firmly in academia as well, haven't you? You're not kind of just done wholesale, I'm in corporate, that's it. Your CV is very broad in terms of the different sorts of organisations you've worked with.
Yeah, I think, well, I always felt, you know, particularly with climate change, you've got this fantastic agreement, you know, well, we'll see where it goes. But, you know, we have these global agreements, and they're based on science that the IPCC have done. And those scientific reports are reviewed by sort of 10,000 scientists. I know from that science, the governments sign up. And then from that, governments, you know, make policies which businesses have to follow. So I've always felt it's really important to look at where the science is going, what we think it's going to say, so there's no surprises. I mean, that's that corporate term, isn't it? It's always no surprises. And for climate change, sustainability, nature, I think it is all about following where the science is saying and the things we must do, because it's very likely then that's going to end up quite a few years down the line in legislation or regulation that you have to follow. And I think I was very lucky a few years ago to be appointed to the board of the Natural Environment Research Council. And that funds the majority of research work in the UK, both on in the air and the sky and space and the sea. You know, it was fantastic to really be able to feed into those discussions around what could be important going forward and to learn from that role. That was a fantastic role to do.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating. I'm interested then, as you kind of look back on the full range of your career, like what branch of your journey, this is the metaphor again, what branch of your journey do you feel has given you the greatest or has allowed you to make the greatest impact? What are you most proud of so far in that career of yours?
Do you know, every big role that I've done, I can think of a major impact. You know, the one thing I was sort of proud of, or that legacy. And whenever I leave a job, I make myself write down, what was my legacy? Because at the time, you can feel that you've done nothing, really, because all you can think about is the tough times.
Yeah.
And it's only really when you look back that you think, wow. And I need to do that more often, actually. I think we all need to look back and go, gosh, look what we achieved then. And actually, recently, I had an email from an old boss from, you know, a few jobs ago, just saying, I'm about to retire, Becky. And I just want to say, I think some of the biggest impact was what you did in naming a few projects. And that sort of thing's wonderful, actually. And
that's lovely.
I know. And I need to do that more for other people, because it just meant the world to me. But thinking of impact, so how do I pull out one thing? And I'm going to actually talk about two.
I'd love to hear about two.
I'm going to really briefly touch on Lloyds Banking Group, where we both worked, and the project that we did together on oil and gas. And that was in guiding the bank to a decision on lending for oil and gas. And I think proud of that, because it really was a complex thing, combining deep commercials around what was going on with the regulation and you know, and how to sort of plot a route through all of that. And I think it was a really good example of working so closely with a commercial team, which is really important for something that did have an impact. So I think everyone who worked on that was proud of that route through, which made deep commercial sense, but also had a positive sort of climate change impact as well.
And that impact on the real world, you know, that company does not finance a whole range of projects now that it otherwise might have done. It was one of the most difficult things No, I would say it was the most difficult thing I have ever worked on in 25 years of corporate life, like that particular time.
Yeah, it's up there, Liv. It's absolutely up there. That's why I couldn't not mention it. But I think in terms of impact, probably more fun and less hard work, actually, really, was I was so honoured to sit on the Committee on Climate Change.
Yes.
But most importantly, I was fortunate to sit on it at a time when the government asked us whether they should change the Climate Change Act to meet the Paris Agreement. So the Paris Agreement had been signed and they said, should we set a net zero target, Committee on Climate Change, and should we set it now? And so that was a really big ask from the government to go away and advise them on. And I feel really fortunate to have been on the committee during that really exciting time. It's not something I can claim at all, you know, individual. I mean, I just look at the members of that committee. To work with those huge brains was fantastic. Yes, and also under the really strong leadership of Chris Darke and Lord Deben. So I was a really small cog in that, very small cog. But to be part of all of that thinking and discussion, and particularly for me, my loudest voice was probably on the land use side of things. Mm. So that forestry and land use is a theme throughout my whole career. And I just talking about rural communities, I live in a rural community. I've done a lot of science on the land use. It's, you know, this fantastic sink, but it's also a real source of emissions. How do we find our way through that sector? Something that provides us so many services of food, of outdoor space, you know, going back to perhaps that love of forestry and being outdoors. But then also so aware of the social fabric of rural communities and how you tackle emissions from that, but also the valuable sink. So it's a really challenging place. And I felt very fortunate to be able to be part of some of that thinking, actually.
So, and actually, those two examples of where you've been involved in those really impactful pieces, what I'm hearing when I'm listening to you talk about them is it just brings home the massive deep complexity of the problems that sustainability leaders work on. You know, everything you start looking at and you're thinking of all the various stakeholders, all the various impacts, short term, long term, you know, these problems are so complex, and everyone's got a view. It's where the real hard work is, right? Is when you realize that these are not problems that can be solved just by working hard or just by, you know, like knuckling down and getting on with something. It's challenging stuff.
I just rolled my eyes when he said everyone has a view, because yes, everyone has a view.
Even people who, everyone, you know, whether it's fully informed, whether it's just a, you know, this is what I reckon, whether it's kind of average bloke on the street, what I've heard on the news. Yeah, everyone's got something to contribute. It's
and
hard.
You have to bring them all with you across an organisation. You absolutely have to make lasting impact.
What are those two? I'm glad you spoke about both, because they're both fantastic things to be super proud of. We've kind of touched a little bit, haven't we, on those tough times already, the complexity of some of these challenges. But I'm really interested in how you, this is more like, now I'm kind of digging down into you underneath the accolades and the job titles and all of that. I'm really interested in how you have stayed grounded, you know, and what have been the real tough times for you on this journey? What's helped?
I mean, all these roles are tough, and you've just alluded to it with the breadth, haven't you? You really have. You know, you have to know about data, you have to know about transformation, embedding things, regulation, policy. You have to deeply understand the commercials of the business which you're working in as well. You have to really be all things to everybody. And yet you can still be viewed across some parts of some organisations as being, oh, that's just that woke thing on the side, you know, it's Becky the tree hugger, or, oh, it's just about comms, it's about us to look good. So you've got, you know, you have headwinds against you when you're trying to do all this, actually what's a really quite deeply technical role. And I know big jobs are tough, whether they're sustainability or not, but I do think there's something about that breadth of these CSO roles. And also, you know, I've never heard a CSO say, oh, yes, totally staffed appropriately, got enough resource, I've got total buy-in. I'd never, ever. And when I talk to my PhD, we're all under-resourced because are we an overhead? Are we a cost? And no, I don't think we are. But trying to get through the business value is very hard.
Yes.
So I think
it is intangible, isn't it? The business value, you know, unless you are specifically, you know, creating highly profitable products, it's extremely challenging to show that direct link. But it is so valuable commercially.
Totally. And I think embedding sustainability into the business strategy is the really challenging one. You know, you've got particularly, you often got a board that are very focused on it and often an exco, but you often have loads of middle managers who are just doing other things. This is just not part of what they do. And, you know, that engagement, you know, it all takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of personal energy as well. But having said that, oh my gosh, some of these jobs have pushed me to my absolute, you know, burnout limits, I would say. Yeah, most definitely. Yeah.
If you look back on those moments, what was the real challenges? What was really driving that kind of that burnout or that sort of limit towards burnout?
It's these incredibly long hours can be difficult. And when you get to a sort of CSO level, you know, there's no easy decisions. So not only are you working incredibly long hours, but every meeting that you have that day, you're making either a very big decision or you're trying to perhaps bring someone else, you know, into the tent or get their views. So every single meeting tends to be very, very challenging. I don't think there's any easy, but I mean, that's the same really for any senior leader. But I came with sustainability, you often find the people you're working with do know less about it across the group. It's not quite so clear cut as a financial or a people argument. They might know less about it and perhaps have quite some, you know, preconceptions, which are either a bit negative about why we're doing it or really positive, but maybe focused on the wrong thing. Like, yes, we're doing some recycling. This is great. And you've got to go, you know, that is great. That's really
important. Overly hopeful. You like, oh, yes, well, of course we can solve this. Get on and do it. Oh,
in your
really?
Life. No.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
So that's really interesting, that kind of that high, obviously the high volume of work, yes, and the decision making. That's one I haven't, I suppose I haven't thought of it in that way before, that at the very highest levels of this work, you can't sort of sit in a meeting and just let it wash over you. You're sort of like fully engaged, fully involved, driving it, trying to change someone's view or at least lay out a case. It's hard graft when you're doing it and there's a lot of it. How do you manage then when you've had times that you've sort of managed it better? What's worked well in those times?
I think it's having that absolute confidence and vision that what you are doing is the right way forward.
Yeah.
So when you're proposing something to the board, or, you know, first of all, getting buy-in across the group, you have to be really, really clear. This is the right thing. Absolutely be 100% behind it and believe in it. So if it's a new sustainability policy, for example, or something like that, be absolutely 100% clear in your mind, this is the right thing. This is worth you expending your energy on and getting through, because it's going to make a real impact.
Yeah.
And often for me, there's some science behind that, or even if I'm telling people about the science, it's like, absolutely, this is clear.
And then secondly, I suppose that tenacity then comes through when you have that sense of absolute conviction. It kind of drives you forward. Yeah. Okay.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's something about fight your battles, isn't it? You know, choose the battles that you fight. That's one of my mantras as well. So I think I could be better at not focusing on the small arguments, but really just going for the big things that make an impact. Mm. I've got better at doing that as I've progressed. But secondly, for me, it's all about the people and the team. And that's me personally, because I know I'm a real people person. That's not for everybody. But I think just building a team around you to support you. I'm so proud of that team that I had around me at Lloyds Banking Group. I mean, gosh, what an amazing leadership team I had under me there.
Incredible
people. Yeah. And I think building that team so they can challenge you, they can feel safe, so you can feel safe with them. That safe space is so important. Mm. And key to that, I think, is authenticity, personal authenticity. I remember I had someone quite early in my career saying, Becky, you know, your face just shows it all. You're far too open. You'd be terrible as a commercial negotiator.
Someone said that to me once, actually.
Really?
Yeah, exactly. Go on. Yes.
And we both ended up in sustainability. Yeah. Well, there we are. I remember saying to him, well, yeah, that's true. But, you know, I'm not a commercial negotiator. I'm a sustainability. And possibly that authenticity when dealing with stakeholders is, you know, just them seeing through that you want to do the right thing.
Yes.
And you're trying your hardest to do that. It's quite important.
Well, it's showing that you are a human, you are a person.
Yeah.
And you know,
yeah,
that's what the heart of it all is, really, isn't it? And it's kind of trying to be vulnerable with that as well when you feel safe to do that.
And for me, it has to be fun and yes, laugh. That's been a feature of all of my teams, and it's we've had a lot of fun and along the way. And actually, I was reading some feedback I'd had as I left a few roles. People have sent me emails, and I have a wonderful coach I'm going to talk about later who told me to keep all this feedback. And of course, you don't, do you? But I've now kept a few bits on my phone.
You must, yeah.
And a lot of it was about Becky. It's just been, we've had a lot of fun and laughter. So yeah,
lovely.
Yeah,
that's
try
so good
that
to
going
kind of, because you're at work for so much of the time. If you're not enjoying yourself, or at least keeping things light and, you know, and bringing that levity into life, then gosh, it makes for a pretty tough time. I think that from my experience, that's one of the things which, when I look back at my time in corporate, I'm like, I was really bloody serious for really quite a lot of that time, you know? I mean, do you know what I mean? Like, I was really come on, guys, let's do it. And I would work so hard that I would often, you know, not go to the fun, or not kind of bring that fun side of it. That's what I'm learning now, is to do more of that, to just be a little bit lighter. Life's too short,
I think,
to
so.
Sort of.
And you're right, perhaps it does come with time. I think I used to try and emulate other leaders earlier on in my corporate career, and now I am what I am, which is can be a little bit of a square peg and a round hole at times. And obviously I'm developing and growing, you are, so I'm not static, but I think I've perhaps accepted a little bit more about who I am and how I and how I work. So for better or worse, really.
That feeling of I'm really interested in where you say, you know, trying to emulate other leaders. It's really, that is what we often do at the beginning of that career. And it can send us down some kind of quite tricky paths where we're trying to be somebody that we're not. And that causes a real kind of dissonance internally, I think. It just makes you feel super uncomfortable if you're trying to put on a super professional approach where actually you just want to crack a joke or...
And I look back, you know, and my early career was in oil and gas, you know, and I just think with lots of much older men, you know, I mean, I'm very different to that. And I look back, I've had some fantastic bosses. I was going to talk about that as well in a minute, who I have really admired and I'm still in touch with. But, you know, in reality, some of them are probably not the best role models for me because that's not my personality type. So, and I'm not the best role model for an introvert, say, because that would, you know, that they would be a very different type of leader. Yeah. So I think it's really important to find the right role models. Really.
I think so. That's so crucial. Yeah. Like I've had a few clients recently where they're quite introverted and they're kind of looking at very extroverted leaders and thinking, well, I'm not like that. Should I be more like that? I'm falling short because I'm not like this sort of all outgoing, bubbly, sociable, networking all over the place. And actually we're like, no, just you find the introverted role models, find the, you know, the Barack Obama, or, you know, find the people who cause you to lean in, to have a conversation and, you know, to listen. And so I've been talking to my clients a lot about that. It's sort of the opposite way around to how you've just described it. But yeah, find the role model for the type of leader you want to be, not just the one that's in front of you, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So what else is on your
well,
list?
I think another thing for me is your, so I talked about the team support, but also your peers.
Yeah.
And so I've always stayed in touch with lots of people throughout my career journey. So there's some who we started off together. We're now all in our mid-50s and we're still in touch.
Yeah.
But also I think I'm learning more and more from more junior people, so much more aware that I'm a product of my time and I want to really learn. And this particular advisory roles that I'm doing now, I'm working with some fantastic young teams. And I'm in touch with people probably who might have reported into me, you know, 10 years ago and are now stratospheric. You know, they've just, and it's just wonderful to see them grow and to learn from them and say, you know, what's going on here? What about this? What am I saying the wrong thing? You know, what's the current zeitgeist on this? Because I don't know that I necessarily am up to date on it all. So I think that's really important.
Yes.
And also people outside of your industry. So for me, probably that's the science community and the futures and sort of foresight community that I really enjoy. And I'll sometimes go to lectures with friends in the evenings and when I'm in London and, you know, and try and sort of go a bit wider than my narrow field. And I think that's really important as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So really, really kind of seeking the input and wisdom of people all around you.
Yeah.
You know, your peers. Yeah. Senior, junior, as you know, in that sort of hierarchical language, I guess, people in your sphere, outside of it. If you think about kind of as you kind of bring everything together, if say in a situation where we've got somebody who's about to step into a chief sustainability officer role for the first time, or into that kind of real top level sustainability leadership, what piece of wisdom, what seed of wisdom? I've got to remember my metaphor. What seed of wisdom would you plant for them? What's that real nugget of advice that you could give to them?
I think I've got two. Is that all right?
Sure. We can do that. We can have two seeds of wisdom.
Right. So there's one I think about the company, and there's one about you. So I think you have to have your red lines, really. Yeah. And you know, you won't get a yes for every single decision you take to your board. I think you have to work out the ones where when you get a no, is that definitely going to be a no forever? So I often say, well, you know, we're prophets. We really are. A number of times I've gone to boards or executive committees and they go, oh, that's lovely, Becky. We'll think about it in 2 years. I don't think we need to do it yet. Mm. You know, and then 6 months later, they come back to you and go, well, haven't we done that? And you know, of course you don't say, I told you so. You just go, well, we'll start it now.
Yeah.
But I think, so there's some things that, you know, it's a matter of time. Yeah. And you have to take people on a journey. But there's some things that you think, actually, they're not going to budge on this. And yeah. I find that very, very hard.
Yeah.
And you don't walk out of the door there and then. But I think you have to have a very clear view on, am I making an impact and am I changing this organization the way that I think, or is the organization, yes. am I working alongside it, or am I pushing too much against and it's never going to perhaps be an organization that I feel comfortable with from a sustainability perspective.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that's quite important, you know, and I have had old times I've walked into the kitchen and said to my husband, do I fall on my sword here or not? You know, if this decision goes away that I'm not comfortable with. And it's tricky. It really is tricky. So I think you have to be clear on what is right for you in your mind. Mm. And then if you think things really are going in a different direction, you have to be prepared to have a conversation with yourself, really,
yeah.
about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then secondly, I think it's about your individual resilience. So, and again, you have to have red lines there as well. Mm. So I live in the Cambrian Mountains in Mid Wales, and I've been here for 30 years this October. And, you know, I don't have a home in London. I travel every week for a few days. It's 5 hours each way. So I can't really do it for a day and back. But the red line for me was, that's where I live. And that's my, you know, that's my safe space. And there's a Welsh word called Tiraith. And you can't see I'm putting my hand on my heart. And it's, they say there's no translation, but it is about that sort of home and that heart, that. And whenever I sort of drive up to my house, get off the train, drive home, I just feel that sense. And that's really important. So for me, I had quite a geographical red line that I wasn't going to step over. But I think there's other things too. You know, I'm a mother, I'm a daughter, I'm a wife, I'm a sister, I'm a friend. You're all those things. And I have, sometimes Becky's got lost in all that, you know, I'm doing all that. And where's Becky? Where's me in that?
Yeah.
And I think my advice would be to try and look after yourself. Now, I have tried. One of the most positive things I ever did was to get a coach about 10 years ago. Mm. So I was so glad, Liv, when I saw you were doing coaching. It was transformative. It's been absolutely transformative, both for my career journey, but also I think for keeping me strong, having that safe space to really share things. And we've worked together for 10 years. Sometimes I've struggled to afford it. You know, there's been times when that you know, I had a huge mortgage. How can I afford this? What felt frivolous, but I'm so glad that I did and that I kept it going. And I might have a break for a few months and then go back to weekly sessions because I'm in a complete tears about something, you know, that I really need some help on. And I want to appear calm and collected at work and just let out all of that to a coach. So I think that's important. I think also, and this is where I feel I haven't done quite so well, is looking after yourself physically and mentally is really important. It's really hard. Yeah. And then, you know, all the dinners you have with the team and, you know, and it's all lovely, but it's quite hard. And I think, you know, your physical and mental health are so linked, aren't they? Mm. So for me, sleep's really important for me. I do like my sleep. And I'm a very early bird, you know, early to bed, get up early. But, you know, I need to have that sleep. And if I don't, then I can feel that my anxiety will increase. So that's really important. So prioritizing yourself a little bit amongst all of this. But, you know, it is so hard. I want to be with my son. I want to be with my husband. I want to be a better daughter. You know, you've got all of that going on. Then you've got this huge job as well. And I have perhaps found it's the looking after Becky bit, which hasn't always gone as well as it could. Yeah.
Do you find that... with that enormous job, you know, you're so driven really to want to make an impact in the shortest space of time that sometimes it kind of has a life of its own in terms of the pace of that work, that you're almost kind of driving a fast pace because you want to see the results? And do you kind of get that?
I think so.
That it's internally motivated, I guess. Isn't it someone cracking the whip? Come on, Becky. But it's also coming from you.
Oh, absolutely from you.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely. And for me, it's also something about making sure I'm there for the team as well. Yeah. And most definitely all of that.
I think it's very gratifying to hear you say about the support you've had from your coach, because obviously... I think the value you can get from a coach is massive. You've had a partnership with a coach for a really long time, by the sounds of it. You know, and that works well to you. Does it feed going back and forth? And, you know, sometimes it's more intensive. Sometimes you don't need them as much. It's a really strong relationship, by the sounds
really
of
well.
It.
Really well. She actually lives in Argentina, but we've become really close, actually. I mean, there's not much she probably doesn't know about me after 10 years. And, you know, it started off talking about particular work issues and, you know, always a coach, but also asked me very searching questions like, Becky, have you operationalized that? You know, how do you feel about that? And, you know, do you feel it's all under control? And I'd be going, no, it's not, is it? And so that was very good. And then I think we've
It's having
more
someone
into...
who can show that mirror, turn that mirror up and go... Totally. This is what I'm seeing, and they're completely out of that work office politics situation. You know, they're just playing back what they see. Yeah.
And then I think we probably moved more into my development, you know, and where I was going as an individual. So and you know, sometimes we may have had a few months off, particularly when she's sailing around the world or something like that. But and then sometimes really, really intense periods. So absolutely. Awesome. Always there. Yeah.
That's been really valuable by the sounds of it.
And on my side, I always feel that someone on my side for me.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That safe space in my corner. Yeah.
Amazing. There's some things that I'm really, I've kind of written down as you've been talking that I'm definitely going to remember and bring in. The concept of your red lines. Yes, your personal red lines in terms of your well-being, but also within the organisation that you're working, where's the sort of moment that you would fall on your sword? Where's the hill you're going to die on, so to speak? So, I think that's a really important one to remember. That feeling of learning from everyone around you and having that sort of cross-industry, cross-specialism, you know, just really kind of taking that wisdom from everybody. I think that's really wonderful. And I think the writing, actually, you said this earlier, writing down each role you've done, what legacy have you left from each role? And I think that's so important, and creating that file, if you're evidence file, I talk to my clients about this quite a lot, create a little evidence file of all the great stuff you've done, because in the tough times, it can feel really tough and you can feel, oh, what's the point? Creating that file and writing down those moments of where you've created a legacy or where you've made a real impact. I think that's definitely one for people to pick up on.
Thank you, Liv.
It's been so lovely talking to you. I feel like I've got to know you so much better because I knew a little slice of you from our work together, but not the whole story. And so yeah, it's been lovely to hear about what you've been doing and to get to know you better. And I think to hear about that human side of sustainability leadership, the challenges, the tricky times, those big decisions, the impact it has, you know, that's been really good to hear you talk about. So thank you for sharing all of that so openly and so honestly. Thank you.
Thank you. So, yes. Thanks for inviting me.
But I loved hearing from Becky there about those challenges, working on those super complex, tricky, but super impactful issues there. And I guess feeling the weight of those difficult decisions, you know, that feeling of every meeting you go into is a challenging one. You're making important decisions, you're dealing with a range of stakeholders, and I really got the sense of that weight from Becky. But also, I think it was so useful to hear from her how she's coped with that and how she's managed that and how she's stayed balanced and grounded through all of that. That concept of having not only your personal red lines and the things that are super important to you that you won't compromise in your personal life, but also that integrity of you know, what are those hills that you would die on? Where might you need to fall on your sword in order to stay aligned with your integrity and your own values and principles? So I thought that was really interesting. And of course, I loved hearing from Becky about the importance of writing down what your legacy was in every role that you do and trying to keep that file up to date as best you can to remind you of where you've made that big impact. And those important reminders to look after ourselves and that we can't make an impact in the world unless we're looking after ourselves first and foremost. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Becky as much as I did. I'd love to hear how you found it. Well, thank you so much for joining me on my yellow bench for this episode of Rooted. If you'd like to hear more conversations like this, then please follow me or subscribe to Rooted wherever you get your podcasts. Please help others to find Rooted by either commenting or leaving a review or just telling your friends and your colleagues about the episode you've just listened to. And I'd also love to invite you to join my Rooted email community. The link for that can be found in the show notes. To chat more with me about the one-to-one coaching that I offer to sustainability leaders, please get in touch with me either via LinkedIn or yellowbenchcoaching.com. And finally, a big thank you to John Cropper for his editing and production of today's episode. See you next time. Bye-bye.